Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, July the 25th. And welcome to our commentary. Just a quick heads up, as we always do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll do a podcast later today. We'll post it this evening. It'll be available in my blog, on my Facebook page, also at Urgent Agenda. Bill will post it there. And then probably somebody, my good friend who keeps posting my stuff on Twitter, will probably post it there as well. So Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, will be talking tonight. We call it the Week in Review. So we'll be looking at a lot of the issues out there, lots of things to get into this week. But today in the video, we're going to talk about a couple of stories that are very interesting to me. And the first one is the Vice President Gore. And this is not so much about him as it is about climate change activists in general, because I think climate change activists need to change their message. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Former Vice President Gore was on Meet the Press on Sunday. Now, he doesn't do a lot of interviews lately, frankly, in part because there aren't that many people interested in what he has to say. I'm not being cynical. It's just the truth. I mean, he was never that interesting of a figure, and he's certainly become a lot less interesting now that he's been out of office for 20-plus years. But he was on Meet the Press, and he was asked about climate change. He was asked about the heat wave that we're going through. So, of course, he immediately went to the climate change explanation. And then he said something very irresponsible. He said that climate change deniers are like the soldiers or the police officers who didn't go in or didn't want to hear the children screaming and let those kids die because they didn't want to risk their lives, I guess, or to go in and save the children. Now, look, there were a lot of problems in Uvalde. We've talked about them, some serious problems, not only in how the police acted, but the fact that the door was unlocked, the fact that this young man was allowed to exist in that community, and nobody apparently cared about his behavior. So there were a lot of problems in Uvalde. But to connect that to climate change is totally irresponsible. But here's the problem. Al Gore is not the only one who's irresponsible. A lot of the climate change activists basically are scaring people, alarming people that, you know, if we don't do something, the earth is going to disappear in 10 years and we have to do this and we have to do that. And that's why they're losing the public opinion. That's why they're losing the political war, because the public looks at climate change and they go, okay, let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation about it. Tell me, give me some facts, give me some information. But to sit there and promote all this kind of irresponsible rhetoric is actually hurting the cause of climate change. And as I write in my American Thinker post on Monday morning, the climate change people need to change their spokespeople. They need to change the face of the movement, because right now the movement is not gaining. In fact, the whole green movement in the United States is going to take a beating in November. They're the biggest losers. The entire green movement is going to be one of the biggest losers because they're so irrational in how they're talking about things. Rather than come up with a conversation, what they do is they try to scare you. So climate change people, you need to get different spokespeople, because the ones you have, at least here in the United States, are not helping your cause politically. Now, abortion has the exact same problem. People can debate abortion. Now, abortion has now, the Supreme Court put abortion back in the states. So you're going to have debates in all the states like we're going to have here in Texas. What's going to happen over the next couple of years is that you will see state legislatures write up abortion laws that represent whatever the wishes of the people in that state want. My guess is that you're going to have probably most of the states are going to end up in a situation very similar to the Mississippi law that was used by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. If you remember, the Mississippi law said no abortion in the first 15 weeks of the pregnancy. That opinion, by the way, or that law in Mississippi is very consistent with most countries. Most countries have limitations on abortion. They do not have unlimited abortion. And here's the problem. The Democrats or many of the abortion spokespeople are basically want unlimited abortion. So they go out and they do these hysterical things, these marches in front of the Supreme Court justices' homes. Or yesterday there was something going on at a medical school and the speaker was pro-life. So a bunch of students walked out. I guess the speech was not even about pro-life. The speech was not about abortion. It was something else. But a bunch of people just couldn't listen to somebody who had a different point of view than they do. And this is why they're losing the public. So both on climate change and on abortion, the extremists are the ones that we're seeing on television. The extremists are the ones who are carrying the message. And unless the serious people take back the issues from those extremists, their issues are not going to move politically. Their issues are not going to move politically. It's very difficult to explain to an American who's paying $4, $5 for gasoline that this is a good thing, because this is going to get him closer to buying an electric vehicle. Yeah, it's good. It's good for you to pay $5 and $6 a gallon, because now you can buy an electric car. That is so stupid that it defies reality. The reason people cannot buy electric cars is because they're so expensive, number one. And number two, they're frankly not very practical, particularly in these larger areas like Texas and much of the West and so on, where you can drive 200, 300 miles rather quickly. I mean, if I drove an electric car from here to San Antonio, 300 miles, I'm going to have to charge it along the way. And charging an electric car is not like pumping gasoline in your car. It takes a lot longer. It's my options are more limited when I have to charge a car. But apparently, you know, the abortion people, the climate change people seem to be, the image they're presenting to the country is a radical image. And that's why they're losing the public debate on these topics. So if you're a serious person when it comes to climate change, or if you believe in that a woman has the right to an abortion, you need to change your spokespeople, because the people we're seeing on television, they're not helping your cause. On the contrary, they're hurting your cause. Well, I mentioned about the Hall of Fame. You know, baseball has a Hall of Fame induction every year. They select the members of the new Hall of Fame, or the new members to the Hall of Fame, usually in January. And then in July, they have the formal induction where, you know, the people get to give their speeches and so on. And for me, this year was a rather pleasant experience, the Hall of Fame, that is. I always obviously follow the Hall of Fame because these are great players who get into the Hall of Fame. But this year there were two players who got in who in many ways connect me with my late father. The first one is Minnie Minoso, who was the great player of the 1950s. He was a great Cuban player of the 1950s. He came into the major leagues right after Jackie Robinson. He was one of the first black players to play in the majors. And Minnie Minoso was just a great hitter. He was just a great hitter. And he also stole bases. He hit with power. He was a great outfielder. And he was the great Cuban player of my father's generation growing up in the 50s and into the 60s. The second Cuban who got in was Tony Oliva. Now, Tony broke into Major League Baseball in 1964, and he was a great hitter, winning three batting titles, retiring eventually because of injuries in the mid to late 70s. Now, Tony was my generation, and Minnie Minoso was part of my father's generation. And this weekend at the Hall of Fame, both of them went in. They both went in. And I couldn't help but remember my father, who obviously passed away a few years ago. I couldn't help but remember all the wonderful baseball chats that we had about baseball and Minnie Minoso. My father took me to baseball games in Cuba when I was a boy. And I remember, you know, vaguely watching Minnie Minoso play. You know, I was too young to remember everything, but my father pointed out that that's Minnie Minoso, the great Minnie Minoso. For that generation, he was the best. And of course, I had the opportunity to watch Tony Oliva play in the late 60s, 70s. And for my generation, he was the greatest Cuban player. So great, I guess, baseball kind of brought two generations together this weekend. And it was an absolutely wonderful thing for me to remember my father and to remember all the great conversations we had about Cuban baseball And so often those conversations have to be about Minnie Minoso. So congratulations to the late Minnie Minoso for going in, and to Tony Oliva, of course, who lives in Minnesota, going in. Congratulations to both two great players. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to catch the Weekend Review with our friend Bill Katz. It'll be available later Monday night. And, of course, then after that, it'll be available all week. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, July the 29th, and welcome to our commentary. You know, there's a couple of stories we want to get into today. We want to talk about the recession and the response from the Biden administration to the recession, and some new information that came out about what the public thinks of the media. And it's not good if you're a member of the media. But let me begin by just going back in history. I know sometimes we like to do this at the end, but I just want to quickly tell you that I have a post over at my Facebook page today, as well as over at Blog Talk Radio. A few years ago, my friend Barry Jacobson and I recorded a podcast about the defeat of the Spanish Armada, and it happened on this day in 1588. So that's a long time ago, 1588. The defeat of the Spanish Armada, a very significant point in European history. So I've got the post over at my Facebook page if you want to listen to the podcast. Again, remember, we recorded this in the first term of the Obama administration. So when you listen to this and you hear some of the current events that we talk about, just remember that this material is probably 10 years old, or the podcast. But the substance of the Spanish Armada in that story, that of course is history and quite relevant, and Barry gets into a very interesting story of how the defeat happened. He gets a lot into the British Navy and the ships they had. I mean, he really gets into a very interesting story. So I'm going to recommend that you check it out, because I think you're going to find it very, very interesting. You know, another quick story that I want to point out. The mayor of D.C., Washington, D.C., is calling on the National Guard to help with the influx of migrants. You know, we've been, Texas and Arizona have been sending buses of migrants to Washington, D.C. and New York City. And the mayor of Washington, D.C. is calling for the National Guard to help the city deal with it. And, you know, on one hand, this is hysterical. I mean, if you just think about it, it's hysterical, because these are the same people who call themselves sanctuary cities and all of that. New York City is the same way. But then apparently when people actually show up, then they begin to call on the National Guard. So it is hysterical, but once again, it shows the problem with these migrants crossing the border. And that is that we've lost control of the border, we've lost control of the situation, and the problem is now moving to places that have not had a history of migrants showing up in their city, like Washington, D.C., and so on. So it's an entertaining story to watch, but nevertheless, it really shows the hypocrisy, frankly, of many of these Democrats who had no problem with people crossing the border and staying in Texas. But my gosh, you know, you put them in New York City and they want to call the National Guard, or Washington, D.C., and they want to call the National Guard. What an interesting story. What an interesting twist of events when it comes to this topic. Well, let's talk a little bit about the recession, inflation. Inflation numbers came out today, very bad numbers. So we now have recession and inflation happening at the same time. I was not surprised when the second quarter GDP numbers came out and that they were negative. I was not surprised because I felt that they would be negative. Most of the economists were actually projecting that. So I expected the numbers to be negative, and they were negative. But I expected, and the inflation numbers too are pretty bad, but I expected the Biden administration to be a little bit smarter in how they reacted to this. Just a tiny bit smarter, a tiny bit, a little bit more political common sense in how they reacted to the GDP numbers. First of all, if you have two consecutive quarters of GDP or negative GDP growth, that is, in the definition of most economists, a recession. Now, recessions are always different. Some are worse than others, and, you know, we don't know how bad this one's going to get. It could be worse. It could be better. I don't know. Nobody really knows at this point because, as I said, you know, we have to wait for the rest of the year and see what other quarters look like. But at the moment, we have a recession. And for the Biden administration to come out, President Biden came out and said, it doesn't look like a recession to me. And then he runs away and doesn't take questions. That's not very smart. In fact, politically speaking, that's pretty stupid. So it's when politicians deny what you're seeing with your own eyes, or what you are feeling in your pocketbook, that to me is the height of insanity. You know, you're telling people, this doesn't look like a recession to me. Oh, really? What does it look like then? What does it look like? And I think that politically speaking, this is a disaster for the Biden administration. Had they come out and say, yes, unfortunately, we have a recession, the technical definition of a recession, but we think that there are better days ahead, and these are some of the things that we are going to implement to make this recession go away, had they done that, I think it would have been better for their political standing than to come out and say, well, this doesn't look like a recession to me. Well, look around. Look around. You have businesses doing layoffs. You have businesses closing. There's a fascinating article that came out today by Selena Zito, Z-I-T-O, Z-I-T-O. She's a great reporter. She's a great reporter. And one of the things I like about Selena Zito is that she actually goes out and talks to people. You know, when you read one of her articles, she's not saying a poll said this or a poll said that. No, no. She goes out and actually talks to people. She actually talks to voters, and she talks to business owners. And she's got a great article about the uncertainty that there is in the business sector in the United States, particularly the small business sector, which is where most of the jobs are created. Most Americans work in the small business sector, not in the large companies. Large companies obviously hire a lot of people, but the medium-sized companies, the small businesses, that's where most people make a living, working in those companies. They're also, a lot of these companies also are owned by people who work there. So anyway, she writes a great article talking about how uncertainty is killing the American economy. A lot of people just don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, she's talking about, for example, several restaurants that have closed simply because they don't have enough labor, simply because the cost of doing business is too much. You know, if you have inflation, you cannot just increase your prices. Sometimes, you know, many of those businesses have to close. And why is there so much uncertainty? Why are there so many people in the business sector today, in the marketplace, who are uncertain and feel uncertainty about the American economy? Well, the answer is the Biden administration, because they don't have a clue and they don't project any confidence in how they present themselves. You know, I've often spoken about the 1982 recession 40 years ago. In fact, the numbers, as I've said before, many of the numbers of this recession are very similar to what happened the last time around, particularly the inflation. And back then, people were just as scared. Businesses were closing, and things got pretty bad in 1982. But there was one man, President Reagan, who at least kept the nation. First of all, he talked to the nation a lot about the problem. He didn't deny the problem, but he kept talking about what he was doing and his administration was doing to move us forward to a recovery. He would do that, and there was a confidence around him and the staff, his staff and the cabinet and so on, that at least people were willing to, you know, to give him a chance and give his policies a chance. That's not the case right now. That's not the case right now. When you have a president at 37% approval, when 75% of Democrats do not want him to run for reelection, those are problems. Those are major problems of confidence. And that's what we're facing with right now. And if you talk to business people, that's what they're complaining about. They don't know what's going to happen next. So if you have a small business, and you're going to hire somebody, you're going to say, wait a minute, I'm not going to hire somebody right now because I don't know if I can pay for that person in a couple of months. So all of that uncertainty begins to compound and compound and compound. And that's how you get the negative feeling that you have in the country right now. So yes, it's technically a recession, but you know, most people don't see that way. They don't think of, gee, there's a recession today. What they think about is their business and their budgets. And right now, it feels like a lot more than a recession. For many people, it feels like a depression. All you got to do is fill up your tank. Now, I know gasoline has dropped a little bit here, and I know that people are feeling, you know, a little bit better because the price of gasoline is dropping. But the truth is that it's still very high, and it's going to go back up more than likely. So the Biden administration doesn't have a clue of what's going on, and they don't seem to have a plan to explain to people what's going on. And that's why there's such uncertainty in the country. Let's talk a little bit about the news media, because some terrible news came out about what the American people think of the news media. Gallup, they do this survey regularly. And in this particular survey, I mean, these numbers are astonishing. I want to make sure I read them correctly, so I'm going to look down at the paper here. 16% of the American people have a great deal of confidence in what they read in newspapers. 16%, 16%. And 11% in what they see in television news. Maybe I think you understand now why so few people are buying newspapers. I'm guilty. We get a newspaper. But a lot of people have simply done away with newspapers. And I think maybe it has something to do with the fact that they don't trust the newspapers. News media, the cable news, their audiences have dropped significantly. Now, Fox News is still number one, and they get a pretty good audience. But even their audience is not what it used to be. It has dropped significantly. But CNN, nobody watches that network. I mean, it's embarrassing, the numbers that they have in that network. And why is this happening? Because the American people have lost confidence in the objectivity of the media. And a lot of it, frankly, has to do with the way the media covers the news. You know, we spend 3 years, every day we have a story about Russia and Trump, only to find out later on that the whole Russia thing was a joke. It was a lie. But have you seen anybody apologize for it? Have you seen any newspapers fire editors for having published this day in and day out? I mean, the sources that were supposed to be close to the information, have anybody fired them? So it is really not surprising, frankly, that a lot of Americans are tuning out the media. And of course, that's not good for the country, because we need an objective media. We need a situation where the people trust the news that they're getting in the media, and they don't right now, as you can see in the polling data. So, you know, bad days for the American news media, and it's not going to get any better. Not going to get any better, because I think once the people tune out, like the people who've tuned out CNN, for example, the people who've tuned out CNN, they're not coming back. They're just not going to come back, because that's what usually happens. You change your habits and you don't go back to the old days. The same thing with newspapers. They're not buying newspapers. If you cancel your subscription years ago, you're not buying a newspaper. That's just the way it is. Now, I like our newspaper in print for one reason and one reason only, and that's because I like to see the baseball box scores. And it's hard to see them on the internet. Okay, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but that's the answer. I like to see the baseball box scores, you know, all the little numbers. I enjoy that. I enjoy reading that. But as far as the newspaper here locally, Dallas Morning News, they're losing money. They just came out with a news story that they're losing money and they're losing readers. They're losing advertising revenue because people are just not getting their news from newspapers. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. You know, get away from some of the crazy stuff in the news and enjoy your weekend with your family. And we will see you the next time. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. And by the way, somebody put a note in there that they get their news from us. Hey, listen, thank you for that. I appreciate that little note there from Super Pilot. I think that's the person's name. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.